Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, everyone. Just before we start the show, I wanted to take a second to say a few words about our very kind sponsors. 100 Resilient Cities is a part of the Rockefeller Foundation, which you'll probably know is one of the world's largest charitable endowments. 100 Resilient Cities is focused on helping cities around the world become more resilient to the social, physical and economic challenges of the 21st century. They're doing some excellent projects in terms of, you know, environmental sustainability, in terms of economic sustainability, and just in terms of, you know, making life generally better for everyone in cities from Manchester to Miami, to Melbourne, to Montevideo. You can find out lots more, including reading up on some of those fantastic projects, at their website, which is 100resilientcities.org. Anyway, now on with the show.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. You know what? I'm a bit pissed off today. As I record this, it's Monday lunchtime. I've been up for many, many hours because I was invited to appear on the Today programme on Radio 4 this morning to basically shout at the Campaign for the Protection of Rural England, a lobbying group with which I have some minor disagreements. But it means I've basically just been obsessing about this report they've put out on the Greenbelt all day. So let me give you the headlines. Basically, they say there are now 460,000 homes planned for England's Greenbelt. Basically, there is this kind of a sea of bricks and concrete approaching. And I've been feeling quite angry about all this and unable to think of very much else, possibly because I had to get up so early and so my brain is not really so capable of thinking of anything else. But the problem with, like, doing a podcast is just me being sort of angry and sort of shouting about why a report is a load of old nonsense. I don't really have anyone to shout at. So I thought I would drag someone in so that I could basically shout at them about it for this week's podcast. So here's the New Statesman political correspondent and official young person, Mr. Patrick Maguire. Hello, Patrick. How are you?
I'm very well, John. I'm glad to be here again, fulfilling my role as a punch bag.
Nice to have you. Well, no, the CPRE is going to be the punch bag.
You're hype man, your corner boy.
Yeah, you're the sidekick. You're Robin to my Batman.
Yeah, I'm Rodney dressed as Robin in your Del Boy.
And this time next year we'll be millionaires. So, okay, you don't spend as much time thinking about housing as I do, obviously. Few people do. But you've seen this report that the Campaign for the Protection of Rural England's put out saying there's going to be like nearly 500,000 new houses on England's greenbelts. Like, how does that make you feel?
It sounds great to me. 500,000 new houses on England's greenbelt. But the small print, I suppose, actually, no, it's not the small print, it's the large print. The headline of the report is, oh, but none of these houses are affordable. As if that's their objection. As if that's their real objection to why they don't want these houses built the greenbelt. Oh, they're not affordable. Well, are we seriously saying if they built 500,000 starter homes on, you know, the greenbelt, yeah, in scare quotes, which, you know, as regular listeners to your podcast will know, includes a lot of car parks, golf courses, etc. The same the Campaign for the Protection of Rural England would then say, you know what, brilliant, you know, more. It's disingenuous.
I'm not entirely sold on this idea that, you know, if it was going to be 500,000 council houses on England's greenbelt, I don't think at that point the CPRE would be, okay, fair play, lads. But so you're not, you know, as an official young person, you're not a huge fan of the greenbelt then?
I mean, it's good for a weekend away. I've just spent, I've actually spent the weekend in a national park, in the Snowdonia National Park, riding the Welsh Highland and Fastidiog Railways. But that's,
not Greenbelt.
That's by the by.
That's not Greenbelt. This is the whole problem.
Well, exactly. I'm not a fan of the green. I'm a fan of the Greenbelt as we imagine it. I'm not a fan of the Greenbelt as per the legal definition, which, you know, I'm not a fan of car parks. I'm not a fan of little used golf courses or bits of scrubland that serve no and that are neither use nor ornament. You know, give me, to quote the great John Ellis, build more bloody houses.
Oh, yeah, quite. So, can I talk at you about why this report is, like, never mind the fact that, like, we probably should be building on Greenbelt. We will come back to that. But can I explain to you at possibly tedious length why this report is, you know, whether you think it's a good idea to build on Greenbelt or not, it's still nonsense that it's happening.
It's your podcast.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, but I've locked the door, so you're trapped here for the next 20 minutes. So, basically, the problem is, the report is a thing called the State of the Greenbelt Report. And they do this roughly annually. It kind of drifts around the year, but they do one every year. And each year, they look at the numbers and they find that, oh, wow, the numbers have increased. In 2015, it was about 150,000 homes planned for the Greenbelt. Now it's about 460. And, you know, in 3 years, the idea that the threat to the Greenbelt has tripled is that's a good headline. This is why it was leading the domestic news this morning. But the word planned is quite important there, because these figures do not reflect actual spades in the ground, even planning permissions. What they represent is local plans, which are documents put together by councils to show how they might meet their housing need.
So, a key word in that sense is need,
yeah.
Regardless of how much people like the CPRE carp and complain and say, you know, won't somebody please think of my car park? It's a question of need, isn't it?
Yeah, but This is my point. It's like we're already getting distracted. Like, well, we need the houses, and we do need the houses, and we will talk about needing the houses. But, like, the point is, it's not more houses that are being produced. It is more local plans. This is not a sign of, like, loads more houses. This is a sign of loads more paperwork saying that houses might happen. It's like, literally, in 2015, when there are only 150,000 homes, fewer councils have produced local plans. It's just more of them have finished these documents. It's nonsense. It's a lie. They are lying to us because they are bad people who want to scare old people into saying they're going to concrete over the countryside. You better give us your money. Basically, is what's going on here.
Well, yeah, I actually know someone who I won't name, between them and the ballot box, who voted for Brexit because they were scared of what would happen to the Greenbelt if we had to build more houses.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is like...
Someone I know and respect.
Respect.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying not to reveal who it is because
So if we're Batman and Robin, then this person is like the Joker, right? Like, this is like my nemesis you're describing here.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
They voted for Brexit.
Because of the Greenbelt.
Because they love the Greenbelt. What do they think about... I mean, I'm sight unseen. I'm assuming this might be an elderly relative. But, like, what do they think about your prospects for buying a house?
I assume they think one would magically become available within the existing stock we already have. I imagine. I don't think new builds figure in their imagination.
I mean, I guess it's also worth stating, you know, you're from the north.
I am.
Like Andy Burnham.
I am. Well, I mean, I'm from the north like Andy Burnham. I wouldn't ever be as immodest and...
You're not a patch on the great man.
No, of course not.
But you are from the same, you're from literally the same borough originally, aren't you?
Like, yeah, although Andy, you know, let's not get into Andy Burnham's biography, but we were both born in the metropolitan borough of Sefton.
In the very fine Liverpool city region.
Indeed. Dave Mell, if you're listening.
Yeah, good old Dave. But, I mean, the point I was reaching for there, though, is that, like, houses are... It's not that there isn't a housing crisis elsewhere in the country. There is, but it's different in character. It's not the kind of sheer supply crisis you have in London and many of the other southeastern cities. And also, I don't know what the average three-bed semi goes for in the metropolitan borough of Sefton, but I'm going to guess it's quite a lot lower than in, say, where do you live now?
I live in Finsbury Park.
Yeah.
So houses there you're looking at, like, 500, 600... 700 grand, depending on which bit of Finsbury Park you're looking at.
For that, you might get a two bed flat.
Yeah.
For an actual house in Finsbury Park, you are talking upwards of a million. I would be shocked if it was less than that. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, does this kind of anonymous person who may or may not be an elderly relative, is it because they're thinking that maybe you will move back to the very fine metropolitan borough of Sefton when it comes to
buy
a house?
If I'm completely honest, I think that was a polite way of saying, I'm worried about immigration. I think it was a respectable middle class way of saying I'm worried about migration. But I mean, it's interesting in that the Greenbelt, as is popularly imagined, is considered integral to our idea. Well, not you or I, idea, John. You know, people with, you know, metropolitan types with podcasts. Integral to the idea of what the country is and the character of the country. So, which is why, you know, ridiculous and thin reports like this get so much traction, because the idea of concreting over our green and pleasant land is so offensive to, you know, a certain English psyche. And I think it is an English one.
Yeah, no, I think it's our kind of national mythology about what the country looks like. I mean, just physically, geographically, when we talk about local history, when we talk about places that kind of exist in the national mythology, they are generally counties rather than cities. Like, there isn't really a sort of Leeds mythology. There's a Yorkshire mythology.
And you, your mind immediately turns to the Dales. As you know, in the north, it turns to the Yorkshire Dales. It turns to moors. In the south, it turns to the Garden of England and the Downs and the Chilterns. You know, yeah, like you say, it never turns to Frankie and Benny's in Beckenfield. Although
that's a fantastic example,
which is probably more representative of the character of the country, actually.
Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But I mean, I do think this is kind of, we do just kind of see the country through the prism of its countryside. Have you ever read Coming Up for Air by George Orwell?
I have.
Yeah, it's a little bit obscure. It's a 1938 novel about a guy who's like realizing that war is coming, and he's having a midlife crisis.
Taking his dentures out.
Yeah.
Obsessed with King Zog.
He's meant to be like 36 years old as well.
He sounds about 60.
Yeah, he's written this old man,
but he returns to the sort of bucolic honeypots of his youth where he used to spend time skimming stones.
Wanders around Surrey and Berkshire being upset at housing estates. But it does kind of fit into that kind of Englishness. It's the kind of, you know, Elegy for a Country Churchyard thing. It's just the idea that the true England is the rural one. So to what extent do you, like, don't be intimidated because I'm sat here. I genuinely want to know your opinion. I'm not judging. I'm not going to, like, I will let you out of the room again. Did you believe we should build on the Greenbelt before you were exposed to my regular?
I'll tell you, actually,
banging on about
the exact point at which the scales fell off my eyes. I was deprogrammed, and I thought, you know what, this Greenbelt thing is a load of hokum. So I did my undergraduate degree at UCL, and the Labour Club at UCL booked David Lammy in the very early stages of his campaign.
Oh, he's good on this,
indeed. Yeah, exactly. He, for his the early stages in his mayoral selection campaign, I think this was late 2014, and he gave an extemporised speech, leant back in a chair, about his plan for London, a lot of it focused on housing, and there was a brilliant virtuoso sort of 10 minutes on why the Greenbelt was a load of old crap, and that's why I keep I'm stealing David Lammy's lines here. You know, he said, why shouldn't we build on golf courses and car parks and disused industrial estates in Zone 9? I think he was literally shaking his fists. And I thought, you know what? This fella's got a point.
Yeah, and the David Lammy's all right. I mean, he's pretty good in this stuff, I suppose. I mean, he's like, you know, if you like that sort of thing, he's probably, you know, he's probably about as good as me as a housing kind of shelter.
But obviously, I was living on a an Elledge heavy diet of,
well, of course,
online content at university as well. So
that's fine. Okay, we'll move on. But like, so yeah, this is the thing that I think often gets misunderstood is if you think about the kind of green space that people actually tend to use and which they feel they get value in their lives from, it's generally either municipal parks, which are not green belt because they're parks, or it's like this sort of full-on countryside. It's like when you were talking about Snowdonia. Yeah, or
it's either a national park.
Yeah, an area of outstanding.
It's not a belt, natural. It's yeah. Green trousers at that point.
Okay, probably going to ignore that.
No, you know what I mean? You know, it's not belting anything at that point. It's the pantaloon of...
It's not this kind of, like, so much of the green belt is literally just, it's the point where London happened to stop in, well, I can never remember what year it was they brought it in. It was part of the Town and Country Planning Act in 1947, but I think it came into effect slightly later. But it was literally just happened to be where the development had got to and no further. So if you go to, like, I don't know, Cock Foster's, which sits right on the physical edge of London, there is a country park up there, Trent Country Park, which is lovely, but there's also just, you know, agricultural fields on the other side of the road. And it's not, you know, we shouldn't be touching the country park, but it's not obvious to me why we need to be growing wheat within a 5-minute walk of a tube station with a train every 2 minutes to central London. That just feels like a sort of, you know, that's not ideal.
It will be useful after Brexit, though.
It will. That's true. In fact, like my friend Jim Smith actually sent me a message just before we started doing this, saying, you know, did you ever go to that potato farm on the Today programme this morning? Because we're going to need potatoes after Brexit. We are going to need all the sources of. I mean, at that point, also like at that point, as people are fleeing the country, demand for housing is going to fall.
Exactly.
So
problem solved.
Maybe I'll have to rethink my
position. Shut city metric down.
Maybe it will turn out that I've been wrong about everything this entire time. So what do you think of that? Sorry, I'm really just kind of asking you stupid questions about housing. It's turning into a bit of a get-to-know-you session. But what do you think about the CPRE as an organisation?
I'm inherently suspicious of any pressure group which prefaces its name with campaign or suffixes it with alliance or, you know, it's one of those slightly shady... I don't think it's shady. I think I'm being a bit overdramatic there.
It's not shady at all, which I find really depressing. Like the Queen's its patron. It used to have, like, it used to be, Bill Bryson used to be very heavily involved in it. It's kind of all these sort of establishment figures who own multiple houses, but they're still like, it's not like the Taxpayers Alliance, which is really just dodgy as anything.
Yeah.
But like, it's a real thing. I just think it's a thing that's completely wrong.
I mean, it's a good case study in how the news cycle works if we get a bit sort of inside baseball. You know, you have people who are wrong about more or less everything on their, you know, from an empirical standpoint, who nonetheless generate miles and miles and acres of column inches by speaking nonsense on emotive but pressing policy issues like this one. I mean, do you think they're right about anything?
I don't actually, despite the sort of self-parodic way I present myself, I don't actually think we should scrap green belts entirely. Like, I think we should just be taking a more flexible view and saying, well, actually, this bit of land next to a tube station that's like off limits to the public, it's not like anyone's sort of, you know, sort of sunbathing there on it or, you know, enjoying it with the kids or something. It is literally just kind of a farm. And you can grow potatoes on site. It's rather further from London. So with the demand for housing in London and certain other cities like, you know, Oxford or Cambridge or Bristol, wherever it is, so high, I just think we should be sort of reviewing it and saying, okay, this bit is beautiful, this bit has this sort of public utility, this bit is just kind of a bit ugly and scrubby and pointless, so maybe we could sort of put four houses here. I just think we need to be kind of like looking at it piece by piece. I don't think sprawl is a good idea. I mean, I think if you go to like one of those big American cities, like, you know, Houston or Atlanta, wherever it is, where it's just it's
carried on forever. Yeah.
And to get anywhere, you need a car. They're too big to kind of make public transport work. That's terrible for the environment. I don't think that's the way forward. So I kind of don't entirely disagree with them. I just think they're disingenuous about how they approach things. Also, there was another stat in this report this morning where they said England has enough brownfield land for 1 million homes.
The brownfield argument is so tedious.
What I like about that line is that, like, there is something wrong with almost every word in it. So firstly, like, saying England has enough land is not useful because it's not a problem in England. It's a problem in specific cities. It's no good there being enough land to build houses on in Barnsley if your job is in Oxford.
Mm.
1 million is actually, it sounds enormous. It's not. It's about 3 or 4 years supply. So even if we used every square inch of that, we'd be about where we started in 4 years time. And also brownfield is as you suggest, a problematic phase. People kind of like imagine it being the opposite of greenbelt. Whereas, you know, some greenbelt is brownfield.
Mm.
Some brownfield is very green. Some brownfield is nature reserves. Some brownfield is chemically contaminated floodplains that you probably don't want to build on because it's going to cost you a bloody fortune and then it's going to flood.
What about their other favourite argument, which is, what about all these empty houses? Can't we do something about them?
I think there are probably things you could do with the tax system to kind of discourage both buy to leave investment, which I don't think is a huge problem, but I think it is a problem at the margins, and people buying, you know, second homes or whatever. Like, I think if you want to spend your money on like a holiday home or something, then fair play. I don't mean the law should stop you, but I think there should be, government should not be afraid of using the tax system to make people think twice about that. Housing should primarily be for people to live in rather than for people to pop down to like once every 6 months because they fancy a weekend in Cornwall or something.
If I'm just dreaming about being rich enough to have a holiday home.
Or a home at all.
I wish.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Good.
Okay, I was lying a little bit. That's not quite it for this week. I just wanted to break in with two observations before we wrap up. The less important of them is that, you know, as you'll know, if you're the kind of person who pays attention to these things, this is episode 99 of Skylines, which means that next week is a big milestone because it's episode 100, because that's kind of how numbers work, isn't it? Anyway, I'm quite excited to have made it into three figures, which is, you know, it's a lot of episodes of this thing now. So to celebrate, I spoke to a few friends of the podcast.
Hello, my name's Jim Watson.
Hi, my name's Barbara Speed.
This is Paul Swinney.
Hey guys, it's me, John's number one fan.
And I asked them to send us questions. I say us because I've got another familiar voice to come back and help me answer them.
Hi, John.
Hello. How are you doing?
I like how quickly you went from it's our 100th episode to like the will to live, losing your body.
So that's the less important thing, the self-indulgent promotions trailer for next week. The more important thing is that after recording that segment with Patrick, I looked up George Orwell's novel Coming Up for Air, which I haven't read for 15 years, and discovered that it was actually published in 1939, and more importantly, George Bowling, the novel's sad middle-aged hero, was not 36, as I imagined. That was, in fact, the age of George Orwell when the book was published. His character, George Bowling, was 45, which is older than me. Not past it yet. You've been listening to Skylines, the podcast from City Metric, the New Statesman City site. It was presented and produced by me, John Ellidge. If you enjoyed the episode, then please do consider leaving us an iTunes review. It really helps other people to discover the show. And, you know, the more people get listening to the show, the sooner I can achieve my real goal of world domination for the medium of trains. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.